This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. It's interesting hearing in your news about the Ackerleys joining this NHL ownership group.
There's a whole bunch of people. Did you hear the rest of the folks who were on there? So part of the Wright family, David Wright. So for the Space Needle family.
Oh, okay.
Space Needle owners. Adrian Hanauer.
The Sounders guy.
Yep. And then another guy who is pretty high up at Amazon. The name is not like
Bezos?
No. Someone really close. If anyone's going to be close to Bezos, it would be this guy.
Okay, got it.
That's such a Boy, that's really technical.
That's okay. Because, the shame of the Sonics ownership was that Howard Schultz had, because there were a bunch of, they had like 40, 50 little minority partners in that Sonic ownership group. And a lot of them would have loved to have kept the team here, but Howard Schultz got offered, I think it was $50 million more by the guy in Oklahoma City. But he could have gotten $240 million, Howard Schultz, from the local owners in Seattle. And because Howard Schultz wanted to be a petulant little brat, and he was ticked off at the city and that they wouldn't build him a new arena, he got $290 million from the Oklahoma City guy, knowing that they were going to move the team to Oklahoma City.
I know.
It's amazing.
I don't know if he's ever going to be able to live that one down.
He's doing okay, though.
I think so.
Yeah, he's still surviving.
he's doing great things in other areas.
He's going to be our next president, you know. Those are the signs he's sending out. And I bring this up here because when the Sonic sale was happening, a good friend of mine was one of those little tiny minority owners of the Sonics. And I talked to him and I said, look, if I wanted to be a deal, I thought I had this delusion that I could be some rainmaker, deal maker guy.
It's always easier when it's not your money, too.
Well, but it was a great idea. And when you hear what my idea was, you'll understand that everybody would have been better off if they'd listened to me. I said, what if the city of Seattle gave you guys Key Arena for $1? And then you own the arena. You guys do all the repairs. You want to do a remodel. And he said, my friend thought it was a really good idea. And so I talked to, at the time, I had some people in city government who would talk to me. And I talked to them. And it was a non-starter.
Okay.
Because and there are some legal reasons. Gifting of public funds to a private entity. But what we were looking at is Key Arena, Seattle Center Coliseum. I refuse to call it Key Arena. The Seattle Center Coliseum was going to be this $10 million a year white elephant. It was going to lose money, and the city would have, without a prime tenant, this building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it turns out they did better than anticipated because they were able to fill it with more concerts, and they were able to replace a lot of the dates when the Sonics left. But that was my idea. We should just give Key Arena to the Sonics owners, let them operate it. We'd still have the building, and we'd still have the asset. So I see in the Seattle Times today, and so I suggested the same thing about the Mariners, mm-hmm. who want $180 million of tax money for maintenance of Safeco Field. And I talked a few weeks ago. And were you in the meeting when we met with some Mariners people?
No.
And one of the things I asked was, what if we give you guys Safeco Field? Would you go for it? So I've been talking about this for weeks and weeks.
Sure.
So headline in the Seattle Times today, and I like Danny West, Nate. I like his columns. I think he does a good job. Here's a way to solve the impasse over Safeco Field. We should sell it. Well, first of all, it's not a new idea. It's something that I've been talking about forever. But the Mariners would never do it. You know why? It's not a good deal. It's not a good deal for the mm-hmm. Mariners. They have a sweetheart deal now, and they want to continue the way things are. They pay very little in rent. They pay about $1 million a year in rent for a half-billion-dollar facility. And I just don't know what's going to happen with this Mariner thing. I don't think they're going to get the $180 million that they want. But then what happens to the building? You know, if the Mariners actually threaten to leave.
Okay, we can't just keep demolishing. I mean, just the idea that we demolished the Kingdome before it was even paid off.
I'm so glad you brought that up. You realize that in Arlington, Texas, they built their ballpark like a year or two before Safeco, and they're tearing it down.
No.
The one in Phoenix, where the Diamondbacks play, they're tearing that one down. And that was built about the same time as Safeco. These stadiums, they're lasting about 20 years. And then they're all getting torn down. Oh. And everyone's afraid they're going to lose the team, like we lost the Sonics. And so then it's got to stop, though.
Yeah, that feels like a giant waste of money.
It's, yeah. Problem is, everyone's saying, let's not pay for the $180 million for the stadium. Let's give it to homelessness, which is also a giant waste of money.
Well, in fact, Hannah Scott is listening to what's going on right now because they're discussing it. They were this morning at King County Council.
Yeah.
And so also the tourism groups want a little chunk of it, too.
Oh, yeah.
The money.
Yeah. And, you know how much the low-income housing that we've been building, you know how much each unit has cost? $500,000 per unit. It is such a racket. There are so many developers and builders who are getting rich off of low-income housing, and now they want that $180 million, putting it into a ballpark. You know, you can understand the people who think that's fiscally irresponsible, but at least the Mariners generate jobs and, you know, vitality, and it's fun. But the other alternative, it's just a big black hole of money. I'll be really interested. I don't know how this one's going to play out. But the ownership thing for the hockey, I like that they have lots of well-heeled, local, grounded people.
Well, although, I think that, you know, as Mike Lewis has been reporting, that it was really important for this group, you know, Bruckheimer and the other guy who are part of the Seattle Hockey Partners.
Right.
It's like they really, really wanted to have, like, some local.
Yes, you want to have local people, like Howard Schultz. I mean, that was the thing about Howard Schultz. When the Ackerleys sold to Howard Schultz, well, at least we know the team will never leave because it's in Howard Schultz's house.
Well, maybe they've assured it because now it's not just the Ackerleys, but it is all these others, too.
Yeah, including that Amazon, David. Hey, speaking of Amazon, next up in the Fastest 15, Jeff Bezos has been roundly criticized because, unlike Bill Gates and Paul Allen, who have, you know, multi-billion-dollar philanthropic foundations, Bezos, who is the richest man on planet Earth, he gives very little money, relatively, to charities. But he has now given a $10 million donation. And I love the group he's donating to.
Mm-hmm.
I just said a few weeks ago, I wish we had more former military people running for office.
You did.
Because there is nobody on earth more selfless than our military. You don't do it for the money. You risk your lives. You serve. You have a service.
It's honorable.
Yes, it's honorable. And this charity, I had not heard of it. Jeff Bezos just gave $10 million, and they say it's his first big political donation. It's a political action committee called With Honor, and it's nonpartisan. It works with candidates of all political parties, and they want to reverse the trend of no veterans in Congress. And they want to get more military veterans elected to political office with this group. And I think that would make a positive change in our country. If we had people who are grounded in selflessness running for political office instead of the people who are just driven to be glory hounds and they want the little power of having, you know, a staff of lackeys, which is all too often what members of Congress represent. But Bezos wants to get more veterans elected. I think that's a great, great cause.
And the name has now come back to me. It's Andy Jassy, who is the CEO of Amazon Web Services.
Got it.
So super high up there.
Well, I like what his boss, Jeff, is doing with, I mentioned right before the top of the hour, this memorial that I saw, Mount Soledad, on Sunday when my wife and I, we just went for a four-day weekend down to San Diego. And it's called the Mount Soledad Veterans Memorial. It is the thing about it. You've been to the, what's it called, the Cemetery of the Pacific that overlooks Pearl Harbor. Have you ever been there?
I have not been there.
Oh, my goodness. It is one of the most soulful, awe-inspiring places. And then this Mount Soledad, it's a private foundation that owns this mountaintop right by La Jolla. And, you know, we went up there and walked around and prayed. And my goodness, we do beautiful memorials. I will say that. And I wish we had more of those. And instead, we have like the Veterans Cemetery out at Evergreen Washelli where people are pooping all over and defecating. And it's shameful, shameful around here. How we're treating our memorials. Next up in the Fastest 15. So did you hear this whole thing last week about the former Cosby actor?
Yes.
I saw it on a friend's Twitter feed.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had tweeted to my friend, how sad. Former Cosby actor now working at Trader Joe's.
Yeah, he was like bagging or something.
Yeah. And I thought, how in the world is that sad?
Was that your initial reaction, really? How was that sad?
My initial reaction, honest to goodness, was that every job is noble and it is better to be a bagger at Trader Joe's than to be some panhandler.
Which I think you're absolutely right. But did you not think, wow, you know, he's fallen far? I mean, he's gone from having this starring role and then, you know, now he's...
I was more concerned with his appearance, not because, you know, he was very scruffy. He was wearing a shirt that was really tight. He had gained a lot of weight. I think it was more a health concern.
I don't know.
Than it was.
No, not the reactions.
To me.
Yeah.
That was my concern.
I mean, I think I can understand where people were saying. Now, I think it was rude and what, you know, how people were freaking out and, you know, some of the things they were saying.
They were job shaming him.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, my honest reaction was, is there anything worse about working at Trader Joe's than being an actor? It's not as lucrative.
Wait, you didn't.
I actually have friends that work there, and I swear to you, I love Trader Joe's.
I swear to you, that was my reaction. I think that every job is noble. I think that what's shameful
is people
who are capable of working and they choose not to.
But you have also shared, remember we were having that conversation about the weather guy who was working on a Saturday and how his career had fallen. Okay, come on. You know, I just don't want to, come on.
Oh man, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well played.
Yeah. So you know what I'm saying?
But
there is that natural reaction, like, and I was saying at the time, hey, he's working.
Can you bump up that weather guy clips? Those are some of my favorite sound bites of all time.
So I get why people would react that way, but I find
Is acting more noble than Trader Joe's?
There are people who will, you know, obviously wait tables for years and years and years to get the chance to act, and they'll do anything to get a chance to act.
Maybe people think he made the wrong decisions, and that's what landed him back in that spot where a lower-paying job, but not that it's less work.
Acting is, it's as competitive in enterprise as exists. I mean, it's like trying to be a pro athlete. And I've known guys who were really close to making the Seattle Seahawks, and they were, you know, sweeping floors.
Yes.
6 months later, and
now there are a couple of great twists to this story though about the Cosby star.
Well, yeah, he was on Good Morning America. His name is Jeffrey Owens. Was he a star, by the way?
Well, he was like the boyfriend.
He was Eldon.
Yeah, it was Eldon. Exactly.
He was the husband.
Husband to who?
To the oldest daughter.
Lisa Bonet.
Nope.
Dang it. She's the only person I know. Wait, never mind.
Sandra.
Okay.
I think. Sandra.
Okay, so he said the person who took pictures of him working at Trader Joe's, first of all, he thinks they photoshopped them.
I did. You know, when I first saw the pictures and everything, by the way, they photoshopped those pictures, by the way. You know they photoshopped
those
pictures.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know,
I don't look that bad.
No.
But I was actually preparing for my role in as Falstaff in a production of Henry IV, Part 1 set in a grocery store. But, I mean, I was really devastated, yeah. But it lasted. It was the period of devastation was so short because so shortly after that, the responses. My wife and I started to read these responses from like literally all over the world, mm-hmm. Of support, and so fortunately, the shame part didn't last very long. It hurt, but then it's amazing.
I guess as I was, you know, first saw it, I thought, well, maybe. You know, there are a lot of people who, like you said, wait tables while they're trying to find an actor.
And that's what he's doing. And the thing that he was worried about is he still wants to act.
Well, sure.
So he didn't want people to go, oh, my gosh, now I'm going to get acting jobs because they pity me.
Right. But almost any job, even if it's beneath what you think you should or could be doing, it's a stepping stone to being self-sufficient. And to me,
absolutely.
That's... Yeah. And, I mean, you know, I had a lot of really crappy jobs, but they led to really good things. And he says that, you know, people felt really bad for him.
I know this might sound weird, and I wouldn't feel comfortable getting acting jobs from this event. You know what I mean?
I
wouldn't mind getting auditions.
Right.
I don't mind if people call me in to try out for things due to what's happened. But I actually wouldn't feel comfortable someone giving me a job because this happened. I want to get a job because I'm the right person.
And here's the message that he really wanted to get out there. And I love this.
I being this Cosby guy who got shamed for working at Trader Joe's, that's going to pass. You know what? That's going to, you know, in some measure of time, that's going to pass away. But I hope what doesn't pass is this idea that people are now thinking, this rethinking about what it means to work. You know, the honor of the working person and the dignity of work. And I hope that this period that we're in now where we have a heightened sensitivity about that and a reevaluation of what it means to work and that a reevaluation of the idea that some jobs are better than others, because that's actually not true. There is no job that's better than another job. It might pay better. It might have better benefits. It might look better on a resume and on paper, but actually it's not better. Every job is worthwhile and valuable, and if we have a you know, a kind of a rethinking about that because of what's happened to me, that would be great. But no one should feel sorry for me, either from a positive or a negative perspective. I've had a great life. I've had a great career, and I've had a career that most actors would really, you know, would die for. So no one has to feel sorry for me. I'm doing fine.
Jeez, I love this guy. I'd never heard of him before. I didn't watch Cosby. I really had never heard of him. But I just, well, I think that's a great message.
And in fact, Tyler Perry offered him a job on the Oprah Winfrey Network for a series. And he's hesitant to take, he's reluctant to take it.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't want to work on the Oprah Winfrey Network. That's beneath him.
Okay, stop. That's ridiculous.
And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. We told you at the top of the show an hour and a half ago about the people pooping on the side. This is the exact opposite. There are a lot of people who have made living on the street their lifestyle of choice. I'm going to talk to one of the neighborhood merchants who's affected by this next. Well, I drive through the Lake City neighborhood pretty much every day. It's one of my preferred routes getting to work. And I've seen the degradation of the neighborhood over the years, but not up close and personal. I can just drive through. But for the people who work there and are creating jobs and paying taxes, it's got to be incredibly frustrating. And at a grocery store there, they have seen exactly what I'm talking about. Grocery Outlet. The owner is Mike Sandberg. He joins us here on Cairo Radio. Hey, Mike, it's good to talk with you.
Hi, Dory. Thanks for having me on.
So tell me what I was just talking about. You've been there. How many years have you been in the neighborhood there, Mike?
I've only been in Lake City for a year and a half.
Okay. So, I mean, it started clearly before that, the degradation. But tell me the kinds of things you are seeing on a daily basis there around your business.
Well, the main thing is we have there's a sidewalk with raised planter beds, very nice, that lead to the crosswalk over to the post office across the street on 127th.
Yep.
And that area, you know, from time to time, people would come and panhandle and then they would leave. But in the last couple of months, there's been a group of, I'll call them vagrants. They're homeless, but they refuse services. So they're vagrants.
Right.
Have taken up residence in the planter boxes. So they've taken that over, that whole area. There's two planter boxes that flank the crosswalk to the post office. And they sit on the sides, on the raised beds, and for the last 2 months or so, they have actually been sleeping in the beds. So they have grocery carts piled with stuff. They pile garbage all over. They defecate on the sidewalks, especially over behind the side of our complex and then also on the sidewalk of the post office. I've called the police several times when there's been drinking parties, but the police really haven't been able to do much. So it's been very frustrating, and it's growing. You know, started off with two people, and now there's a core of four or five that stay there all the time, and then it's kind of a meeting place where there could be as many as 15 people that stop by and kind of party there.
And they're literally sleeping in the planter boxes?
Yes. There's three or four that just sleep there.
And I guess
right
what
in the planter box.
What makes this amazing, I mean, I know you have to deal with the defecation. People are pooping on the sidewalks. They're pooping in the doorways of businesses. There is a public restroom within just a block or two, isn't there?
Right. Down by what they call the Concrete Park, which is right in the middle of the town, right by Bartels, there's a real nice handicap access porta potty that's right there.
And do you?
But they don't. I've never seen one of them go down there.
Do you interact with them when you see aberrant behavior, or is that too dangerous?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of dicey, you know. I've gone up and I've talked to them and encouraged them to leave. I even thought about, you know, what can I do? I talked to a homeless advocate guy that I know, and you know, it's like, well, what can we, you know, provide for services or whatever? And then he just said, no, it's not going to work. It's too good of a panhandling area. That's why they're there.
Well,
so they've staked that ground out, and they've told me that it's city property and there's nothing you can do about it.
And are they defecating on your property?
No.
Okay.
No, they're really not on our property. Because we have some say-so on what goes on our property. And if I see the overflow onto our property, I'll go out and have them move their things. And but they are pretty well aware that they kind of see that as a safe zone and an untouchable area. The thing that bothers me more than just what it's done to my business, and it has definitely impacted my business. We've had a number of customers tell us that they love shopping at the store, but they can't come back, that they don't feel safe bringing their children, that they don't feel safe parking their cars. And the old rule of thumb in the business is that if one person tells you something, there's 10 others that talking with their feet.
Well, and there's
so we've seen a substantial decrease.
There's a huge variety store right across the street from you, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's a Fred Meyer. I've seen people.
Right.
I have seen people shooting up heroin in the parking lot there. My wife will not go to that Fred Meyer. She loves Fred Meyer stores in general. She will not go to that Fred Meyer, and my heart breaks for business owners who have to take all the collateral damage of what is just an absolutely failed policy in our city.
Yeah, and I would like to take a moment to shout out to my customers that have braved the situation, and I really appreciate the fact that they are coming back, and also to those that have left, you know, I hope they'll give us another chance because we're working hard to rectify the situation.
So what is it like? Because, you know, I said at the beginning, Mike, you guys are the job creators. You're the taxpayers. You're the ones, you're the economic engine of the city, guys like you. And when you have, and I don't know where you place the blame. I place it squarely on failed city leadership. But what is it like to be working your butt off to try to make ends meet, to try to create jobs, and to have to deal with this on a daily basis?
Well, I'm with you 100%. It's all due to the city leadership and the city the Seattle City Council and the mayor. And I reached out to the mayor. I sent her an email about a month or 6 weeks ago. I didn't receive a response. I sent an email about 3 weeks ago to Council Member Juarez, who's in our district, and didn't receive a response to that. And then about a few days ago, I sent a return, kind of a little more snarky email than my first one. And then, to be fair, I did receive a call yesterday from Juarez's office, from one of her aides, and they said that after saying how behind law enforcement they were and that they had that hotspot, they called it, on their radar, but I haven't seen any action. I filed a formal complaint with the city. I received a response on July 30th that the navigation team will investigate that site. But give them 2 to 4 weeks to do it, and that time has come and gone, and I haven't seen any action there yet either.
Well, so, and like you said,
I'm really disturbed.
Yeah, well, you said this is, you know, they refuse services. There's a big food bank right nearby there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, because that's when I saw the neighborhood start to go straight downhill, and that breaks my heart because my daughters have volunteered at that food bank. The girls I coached, I encouraged them to volunteer at that food bank. And yet, you know, you want to help the people who need and want help, but all of this is being overwhelmed by people who refuse to get help, and they've just made living on the street and pooping on the sidewalk their lifestyle of choice. And it has just become, it's just become a horrible blight on our city.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people should know, too, that the people that I'm talking about, particularly the core people that started kind of the encampment, they have social workers that call on them on a regular basis, offering help that they always refuse.
Sure.
And it's not a housing situation. It's a situation that, you know, I'm quite certain that if somebody was willing to give them a free apartment, they would take it. But they don't want the responsibility of stopping drinking and drugging and having to work. They embrace the lifestyle that they have, and they've so much as told me that.
Yeah, well, I know that that's true.
You know.
Yeah, there's no doubt at all. And the problem is, if we gave 3,000 of them apartments, we'd have 5,000 vagrants from around the country. More than fill that void, and the policy is just all backwards. Well, I hope you guys weather this storm, Mike, because I know, like I said, I feel for the business owners. I appreciate your customers that are supportive of you. They know it's not your fault, and I hope you guys can hang in there.
Yeah, Dory, I'm not trying to be an activist. I just want to run a grocery store.
I know exactly what you mean.
You know, another thing, one thing that's given me hope through this whole process, and I want to give a shout out to them, and that's the Facebook page of Safe Seattle.
Yes, yeah.
It's a community group. I'm sure you're familiar with it, and they do some great work, and they've helped me, hold out hope. And now that we're getting some attention from the media, hopefully things will begin to change.
I'm with
and
you on that.
One last thing, and okay. I have to do this, is that my wife, Sue, and her boss Christina are huge fans of yours, and they made me promise to give a shout out to them.
Sue, Christina, thank you. I appreciate you guys listening. I'll give them a shout out too. How about that?
All right. Thank you, Dory.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Good talk with you.
Bye bye.
Mike Sandberg, he owns the Lake City Grocery Outlet. And it sounds like his wife, Sue, and co-worker, Christine, it sounds like they are just absolutely wonderful human beings if they like the radio show. Okay, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. That's the Online Trading Academy text line. And we got lots more straight ahead on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, how about those Supreme Court justice hearings? Boy, those are fun, aren't they? So the big thing yesterday was there's a woman sitting behind would-be Justice Kavanaugh named Zina Bash. And this was, it started to go crazy viral during the show yesterday. And I had no idea what anybody was talking about. But this woman, she had her arms folded and her right hand, three fingers were over her elbow and her thumb and index finger had like an O. So it looked like the OK sign just dangling over her left arm. And apparently that's some white power sign, some people think or say. I'd never heard this before. So this woman, she's a Harvard-educated lawyer. Her grandparents were Polish Jews who escaped the Holocaust. She's Mexican on her mother's side, Jewish on her father's side. And she supposedly was flashing a white power symbol. It was just insane. But I wanted to play for you. Ben Sasse is a senator, and his opening comments, this was a beautiful, beautiful reminder.
Restore a proper constitutional order with a balance of powers. We need Schoolhouse Rock back. We need a Congress that writes laws and then stands before the people and suffers the consequences and gets to go back to our own Mount Vernon if that's what the electors decide. We need an executive branch that has a humble view of its job as enforcing the law, not trying to write laws in the Congress's absence. And we need a judiciary that tries to apply written laws to facts and cases that are actually before it. This is the elegant and the fair process that the founders created. It's the process where the people who are elected, 2 and 6 years in this institution, 4 years in the executive branch, can be fired because the justices and the judges, the men and women who serve America's people by wearing black robes, they're insulated from politics. This is why we talk about an independent judiciary. This is why they wear robes. This is why we shouldn't talk about Republican and Democratic judges and justices. This is why we say justice is blind. This is why we give judges lifetime tenure. And this is why this is the last job interview Brett Kavanaugh will ever have. Because he's going to a job where he's not supposed to be a super legislator. So the question before us today is not what does Brett Kavanaugh think 11 years ago on some policy matter. The question before us is whether or not he has the temperament and the character to take his policy views and his political preferences and put them in a box marked irrelevant and set it aside every morning when he puts on the black robe.
Oh, man. That was beautiful. That was beautiful. And when you have somebody who is a purely partisan political hack like Bob Ferguson, who's in our state's top legal office, the AG's office, shows you how far gone our state government is compared to that. Big lead at 2, coming up next.